It's Wednesday, November 4th, 2009, and you're listening to episode 168 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 58 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Chad.
This is Wayne.
And my name is Pat.
And I am learning a very valuable life lesson. I like beer.
No, you don't.
I do not like bitter beer.
That's what beer is.
Well, in varying degrees. I just took an India Pale Ale.
I don't like it. I don't like it.
Yeah, and I'm quickly learning I don't like them either. But when I was at my brother's wedding, as a wedding gift, they got me this beer club thing where every month or every couple months or something, they drop off, I guess it's like 12 or 24 different beers. And it's this random selection of all these microbrew.
So it's basically 20 beers you've never heard of each month.
Yeah, all these little microbrew beers. And some of them are really good. Mm-hmm. But I just, at random, grabbed an India Pale Ale. And normally, if I find a beer that's a little bit too bitter, I can just cut it with a little bit of lime, and it's fine. I mean, even Guinness, I can get to my taste with a shot of lime juice.
Put lime juice in Guinness to cut the bitterness, which is why a lot of people drink Guinness.
Not why I drink it.
Okay. No, hey, you know what? I saw you putting the orange juice in it, and I saw you putting the lime in it. I was making fun of you. I'm still giving you a lot of crap, but I was thinking about it, and it's like, you know, there's a difference between a cigar snob and a beer snob. And I'm a wannabe beer snob, but I'm not there. But I am a cigar snob. And to me, a cigar snob is about personal enjoyment. It's about that time you take, even if you're with friends and you're all sharing cigars, it's about that enjoyment that you're having. So there's different things, you know, all the rituals involved in smoking a cigar, whether you smoke it down to the little nub or whether you just smoke a little bit of it, you take the band off or not, or what kind. It's all very personal. Beer snobbery is different. You know, beer snobbery, I look at you and go, you're putting lime in that IPA. You're doing something wrong. And it's like, no, that's not what it should be. You enjoy it.
Well, you know,
if you're, it's all about your enjoyment.
Actually, the look on his face, he wasn't enjoying that.
Well, yeah, not that concoction.
People put lime in Corona, and not just Corona, but a bunch of those other beers. People put orange in Blue Moon. I mean, put slices of orange or wedges
of
orange.
Yeah, it's a wheat beer.
Yeah, and so they put
orange
in it.
Each other, yes.
And so I take this beer, and I first try cutting it with a shot of lime juice. That does nothing. I then pour in a significant amount of orange juice, and it is still bitter as hell.
Everyone knows I don't drink much.
I have this?
Yeah, if you want it, because I really...
It's actually pretty good.
See, I do drink occasionally, but my thing is, I don't like the taste of alcohol for the most part. I don't like the bitter taste that beers generally have. I like a more sweet taste. So there are some things I like, and occasionally, if I'm going out with people, I will drink a little bit, but I'm not much of a drinker, because I don't like the taste of it.
I can't explain why I like an IPA mixed with orange juice, mixed with lime juice.
Wayne,
it's really working for me.
I should make
really
some drinks
know why.
Because your tastes are similar to mine. My alcohol tends to the sweet, so I would imagine I could make you some drinks that you would probably like.
One thing I'm kind of looking forward to with Fear the Con 3 is all the talk about the beer tasting, because I don't have a lot of experience with that. If this happens, I am willing to try something. If someone thinks, hearing my taste now, that they have a good idea.
And I will say, Wayne, that the people who are coming to Fear the Con for the beer tasting are beer snobs.
Yeah.
I mean, like Mikey Mason, for one, he's part of a beer snob podcast. And the guys who are making the beer, Killer Cheese Wets and Cazelle, those guys make beer. It's their life goal to be brewers. What they want to do when they grow up, make beer and sell it to people.
The idea being, these are the guys that know so much about it that even if when they hear my taste, they're like, that's not a good beer.
Like I said,
they would know what falls under that category. They could point me to something that's the cheapest, most horrid thing, and I might love it.
Fallon Gold. It is probably one of the least bitter beers I have ever had.
See, if you truly have tastes like I do in what you like to drink, I'm going to go out on a limb and say you probably won't like any beer, because I don't. I just do not like the flavor of beer. It's the same thing with like coffee. I hate coffee. I won't drink any of it.
Least I completely agree there too. I don't like coffee
either. It's along those lines. Beer.
I like strawberry daiquiris.
At the heart of it, beer is made with the same basic four ingredients. So it's going to have that basis of taste. It's just a matter of what other crap you put into
least
it.
Least bitter
to make
beer
it
I've ever
different.
Had was smooth as glass. Absolutely no flavor to it whatsoever. Is Dingsdao, the Chinese beer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like drinking water. I imagine that if I got a pitcher of that, I would just drink the whole thing in less than 2 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And I just... Because it doesn't have any flavor. It's like water.
I can get into drinking just about anything that I've drank, but it's a matter of how many does it take before I don't mind the taste. And I don't want it to be like that. That's why I'm kind of curious what people are going to bring and what I can try.
Yeah,
but I think you're right, Pat, to be honest. I think no matter how good the beer is, my taste just don't
match up with
that.
What'd you think of the...
Because I don't like you said, I don't like coffee either or anything like that.
What'd you think of that beer when you went out with us for the cigar night and I had that beer at Growlers? Growlers is a local sort of pub thing we have here. It was a New Belgium 1554. That's a fairly thick beer. Not the thickest, obviously. It's not like an oatmeal stout or anything, but it's a fairly thick and dark beer. It's a very smooth beer. What did you think of that?
It wasn't as bitter as a lot of what I've had, but basically on my scale of really bad versus really good, it wasn't anywhere near really bad.
Right.
It was something I could drink a glass of or something, but it wasn't anything I would order and enjoy.
Yeah. Dan, this should be the most horrible swill I've ever had in my life, but it's
an accidental masterpiece.
I don't know why. I should be doing a spit take right now, but this is working for me. You know, I have a Gen Con story, too, about beer. So Zeke Copper Eyes and I are playing in the great Bob Aaron's Scooby Thulu game.
Much.
To say it's not for children, it's not even for adults.
No,
I mean, it was
borderline offensive to me.
Yeah.
And I was the one that was being the most offensive.
My wife played in this game at Fear the Con, too.
No, she didn't play in the game I was in.
The story she told of it afterwards just blow my mind that this happened in a game. I mean,
not safe for work, not safe for the human mind.
No.
It was great.
Hearing secondhand stories of it aren't safe for the human mind.
And I'm drinking gin and tonics, and we were talking, we go to, what's the bar called? God, what was the bar called? They only opened it for Gen Con.
Beneath the station.
Yes.
It was in Union. Yeah, it was.
Oh, my God. What was it called? It's so great. And everybody who goes to Gen Con is like, it's called this, you dumb motherfucker.
It bothered me now because it was the basement of Union Station.
Yeah. So anyway, we're playing in there. And the first night we went, we kind of do a tradition when the Booters get together. We do prairie fires, which is I think it's tequila and vodka and
Tabasco sauce.
Wayne took a slug of Dan's brew,
and you know it wasn't so much the alcohol itself in there. I don't like orange or I'm getting citrus out of it more than anything else.
Yeah.
So
you should.
So anyway, we try and order these, and they're like, "Well, we don't have any hot sauce here." And we're like, "Okay, well, I guess we just can't have any." He's like, "No. Tomorrow, come back tomorrow. We'll have hot sauce tomorrow." Okay, so we come back. In fact, we went there almost every night. In fact, we did go there every night. And one of the bartenders brought in hot sauce. And this looked like the hot sauce that he got out of his fridge at home. I mean, it was half empty. It had all that hot sauce crusty at the top and stuff. So, you know, it's really good. So we just...
Yeah, this random thing from some guy's fridge.
Hey, yeah.
I know it's good because of that. Ooh.
Shut up. So anyway, he pours us out the drinks and he's like, I don't know how much hot. Here, you just take the bottle, you know, take care of yourself. I'm like, okay. So we go back in our little role-playing corner that we're having. And so as the night goes, and we have our prairie fires, and as the night goes on, this hot sauce is sitting there, and I'm drinking gin and tonics. And I'm like, and I put a couple of drops in my gin and tonic. I stir it around, and Christian is sitting there next to me and kind of gives me, you know, I don't know if he says anything, but he gives me the look like, huh? Is it good? Is it bad?
You get that look a lot, don't you?
I do. And it's like, you know, this is actually kind of good. I actually kind of like this gin and tonic with a couple of shots of hot sauce. We're several in, by the way. We're feeling pretty good. And so he has this beer, a bottle of beer, and he's like, not going to let Chad show me up. And so he puts a couple of drops in his beer. And I'm like, is it any good? And he takes a drop. I think he says, you know, it's okay, but I don't think I'll ever do it again. And, you know, and so I'm just like, well, I'm not going to let this guy show me up. So I take a couple of more drops. I put a couple more in mine. Gin and tonic is a clear drink. It's starting to turn red now. And so I stirred it up and he's like, how is it? And I'm like, my lips are on fire. And the only way to quench it is to drink more and get more fire. It's like, good. He's like, oh, yeah. And he starts putting, I mean, this thing goes on for a couple of cycles. And by the end of it, we're just punishing ourselves. It's great.
You know, next time someone asks me why I don't really drink, I'm going to point them to this episode and that story.
I think they pretty much
know. No. I have far better stories on why people shouldn't drink.
This is like using the Darwin Awards to explain why you don't own a boat. I mean, this is not.
I remember the time I got so drunk at a party. I'm standing there with my brother-in-law who does smoke. Don't quite remember how we ended up on the porch, but, you know, parties go like that. And I don't smoke. I don't smoke cigarettes. I think cigarettes are disgusting. And so he's standing there smoking a cigarette, and I'm just sitting there chatting with him. And the sort of, if you've ever been really drunk, there's that sort of woo-woo-woo-woo, and then time passes, and you don't really conceptualize that time passing. And somebody walks up to me, and they're like, Chad, you don't smoke? And I'm like, of course I don't. And I'm like, and then my eyes get real wide, and I look down between my two fingers, and there's a half-smoked cigarette. Where did you come from? Oh, well.
Let's talk role-playing games and pretend that's what the show is about. Right now, as I think we've mentioned on the show, our gaming group is between games. We just wrapped up one campaign, and we are preparing to move on to... We're going to have maybe one or two one-shots in there, or Chad's going to do a little bit of Mouse Guard, and Wayne's going to do some Mutants and Masterminds, and then I'm probably going to run a longer campaign. And as I'm prepping for this campaign, I start thinking about one of the recurring problems that I have in a lot of the games that I've run over the years. Not all of them, but most of them, which is this. I come in wanting to have a pretty serious game, but at the same time, the people around the table, even if it's the best of games... You know, I've run my share of lemons, but even if it's the best of games.
You know.
They had a stressful week. They want to jack around. And sometimes it gets to the point where it's okay. Somebody makes a table joke, ha, 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 whatever you get on with the game. But sometimes it reaches that point where the game is not progressing because the table chatter and the jokes and the one-liners have utterly... destroyed immersion. I can't get through three words of the plot without somebody making an obscene pun off of an NPC's name or whatever. Let's start with the presumption. This is not a dead game, nor is this a game that's so bad nobody wants to play. People genuinely want to play this game. Because I've had these moments where I've been like, look, guys, if you guys don't want to play this game, we can happily put this down, switch campaigns, even just blow off the night and just go play Wii or something instead of continuing this game. And everyone's like, no, we're really into this. We want to keep going. But that level of table chatter never subsides. And these are not people who are just going to tell me your game's great because they want to keep playing. If it sucks, they'll say, yeah, let's go do something else.
You know what I've noticed that most? Let's say you've had this big week and the next week is kind of a down week. That down week seems to have it a lot more than the other big weeks. Like if everyone's going in knowing this is the... You know, this is a big week, a huge plot point's going to happen. Everyone seems to be more focused, but on the in-between weeks, it just happens a lot more.
You're right. But one of the phrases I hate most regarding movies, and books as well, is in a trilogy, everyone says, well, it's a bridge movie, or it's a bridge book. Yeah. It's the middle one. As if that explains why it's okay for the middle book to suck.
Yeah, because it's a $50 million suck bridge movie. Yeah.
You know, if it's a bridge movie that's not telling a story... Don't make me pay full price for it.
Maybe the last movie needs to be 45 minutes longer, and then the other movie needs 45 minutes longer.
Yeah, exactly. And I have never been able to accept... Now, certainly, in a middle book or middle movie, you can't introduce the plot because you've already done that. You can't end the plot because that's for a third one. But if you cannot tell a compelling element of the story in the middle, don't waste my time and my money. And so... Let's say we've even come into a game. So I can expect that people may have this expectation. Well, it's a bridge game. We just had a big plot point, which means we're probably not going to have another major climax for another game or two. And so people come in with kind of the wrong expectation. But nonetheless, I've got some real meat. I've got some real stuff they're going to go through. And I can't get the people at the table focused. What kinds of things have you guys done or do you guys think would work to keep people on task?
Shock collars.
I'm going to go ahead and throw out the one that's going to be wildly unpopular with this group, because I've been through it and it's worked and I think it's, I like it, but I know you're not going to. And that is basically some form of random encounter, but a like a small scale combat. We've done this. We've had that problem in games in the past. They're just not focused for exactly what you're saying.
You're going to bore me into focus?
And I'm, well, and that's, and that's, see, that's your problem. You find combat boring. I don't, and our groups didn't. We had fun with combat. So for us, and it wasn't just a, okay, I'm going to shove this down your throat, right, kind of thing. You put it in there in a logical way, but still, you roll out and you have just a small thing. And because for us, it was a focusing thing of all of a sudden we realized, okay, we got to get serious. There is a real threat to our well-being here, and we focus and center and go.
One of the pieces of, I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be pull out the minis, the battle map, and the dice. Now everybody gets focused. It goes back to that old piece of advice for game mastering. If your game is slow, the characters are unfocused, the players are unfocused, blow something up. No reason. No, you know, they're just standing on the street. Where do we go? Where do we go? Car explodes. Well, why does it explode? Well, you don't...
I don't know, but I'm going to go over there and find out.
Yeah, the Game Master really doesn't need to know why something exploded.
It exploded
at
because
that moment.
You're joking around.
Well, because the players are going to spend the next 10, 20, 30, even an hour either escaping trouble, running into trouble, causing their own trouble, or figuring out what in the hell the trouble is. And the explosion is metaphorical. I mean, it could be a random encounter. It could be an actual explosion. It could be something happening. It could be a bad thing. Just something bad happens. And again, when I say the Game Master doesn't need to know exactly why that happened, it wasn't in your notes, it wasn't part of your idea to do that, it's because the players, hopefully, are going to be running around like chickens with their heads cut off, doing something that you could kind of sit back for a moment and weasel that into your plot.
You know, something that I've done in the past, I haven't done recently, but I have done previously in my game mastering career, and maybe should start doing again, is in addition to my notes, one of the things I have is a page that just has a couple bullet points of these plug-and-play problems. Mm-hmm. These little Legos that I can stick in anywhere, that if the game is slowing down, if people aren't focused, not just I'm going to blow something up and figure out why later, but I've actually already figured out, here's something I can make blow up, and here's why it blew up. And I can just, on the spot, say, okay, I need to tweak a little bit to make sense with the current actions and their current enemies, because this was written at a high level to fit anywhere in the campaign, but I just check that one off as used, and okay, this is what's going to happen. But if you solve this within the game, I think there are two good ways to get everyone's attention. One is to either make them feel threatened, their characters are under attack, mm-hmm, for some reason, or secondly is to weird them out. And this may work better or worse in some games, because some games may not really allow for it, but if you do something they were completely not expecting, totally out of left field, the town sage walks by and you see him take off his face and put it back on or something.
What?
Exactly. And you know what? The table conversation is going to stop, and that's going to be the, wait, what?
You know, I have to admit that I was sitting here and I took a pull of the strange brew that Dan made, and I was thinking about it, and I was thinking about Fear the Con, and I was thinking about beer snobs and about how coffee snobs are actually the worst. You know, French press, only distilled water, only these kinds of beans for this long, this temperature. I mean, it's just painful. And this is the kind of ADD thing that was going on in my mind while Dan was like, blah, 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 blah. And all of a sudden I hear, and then the wizard takes his face off and puts it back on. Huh?
Depending on what you throw out there, though, that could actually backfire on you and lead to more jokes. That was so strange that we want to joke around that.
Well, and you got to be careful. And this leads into my other option, which is if you can't solve it in the game, you solve it metagame. For example, my way of handling a lot of times, I just sit back and stop running the game. I don't say anything. It's really passive aggressive.
Yeah, I've seen you do anything. This a few times, and
just wait, and eventually people are like, wait a minute, we won a game. And I'll be like, I'm just waiting for you guys to finish.
And but sometimes it doesn't. I mean, and I think what we're getting at here is when it's gone on long enough, and I mean, it's like the group is wasting time, and we've suffered through that all the time.
Yeah, and as a player,
we have trouble rolling.
I see it happen all the time, and I try to jump in, I try to get it flowing, try to help whoever's running the game, because I want the game to be moving, I want things to be happening, but it never seems to work as a player.
I think it's going to take some kind of a unifying event, and I think that falls squarely onto the GM's shoulders.
And I think that a lot of it stems from maybe, well, I mean, I know in our group, half the people haven't seen each other all week. If we skip a week or 2 weeks, I mean, that's a long amount of time that you haven't seen your friends and you're catching up and you're being social. And, you know, I mean, gaming's fun, gaming's important, and I'm there to game and everyone's there to game. But sometimes you're there to be with your friends. And I think just naturally in your mind that there's a kind of override. And I would have to say that I think it is incumbent on the GM. I want to be the person who says, okay, it's a collaborative thing where it's the GM has to pull in focus and the players have to rein themselves into. But honestly, the GM's the ref here.
Yeah, I mean, I want to say the players can make a big difference. I want to say that, but
if one guy in a group of six,
I know
is RPing,
that at least me in my case, I have never been able to influence that. I try consistently. You know, I try to get, you know, people back into the game, get back going, and it never works as a player, one against many.
Who is, as a GM, firmly frustrated with the amount of stuff that is put on the GM to do, I have mixed feelings about that. Because on the one hand, I see what you guys are saying, that the GM, like it or not, is the leader of the table, mm-hmm. for better or for worse. And therefore, it may be incumbent simply by the way the world works. This is not right, but it just is.
Yeah.
That it's going to have to come from the game master. Say, well, stop. But
do people listen to 10 people or do they listen to one person?
Yeah. And
they listen to one person.
But what I think the players can do is the players can come in with the attitude of at least I'm not going to contribute to it. And if the GM's trying to run the game, I'm going to back him up. I'm going to try to RP. If the guy next to me is the biggest source of one-liners, I'm going to start RPing with him.
Yeah. That's exactly what I'm trying. When I say that as a player, I see this happen, I try to do it. That's exactly what I try to do, is I try to get that one person.
Right.
Or if the one person's on his cell phone completely ignoring it, I go for that one person. And I say, my case, it hasn't worked, but I think that may just be me.
Well,
more experienced.
And I think
maybe
that there can be
better.
A duel of waiting. And what I mean by that, because I've done this with you, where you sit back and you're waiting for everybody, and I'm not jacking around necessarily, but I'm waiting for the game to start as well, and I whip out my phone and I'm just amusing myself while I wait.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm waiting on you and you're waiting on me and I'm waiting on you and you're waiting on me, and then the cycle goes on.
And then
on
the
forever.
Whole time you're doing that, I'm trying to get you back into the game while you're waiting for him.
Yeah. And I'm looking at you,
him.
I'm like, quit bothering me. I'm playing this game on my cell phone because the game that we're here for hasn't started yet.
Exactly. And we're both trying to get the game started our own ways, and it's not working at all.
Wow. It's like a dysfunctional, bigamist gay marriage.
Wow. I really don't know where to go with that. I mean, I'm just playing on my cell phone. I'm not...
No, I'm just saying all the communication issues and the... We all want something, but we're all waiting on the other person to go first and to ask.
We all want the same thing, but and we don't know how to get there.
Yeah, well, bingo. GMs are from Mars, players are from Venus.
And I do have to say, in defense of dithering, in defense of talking and screwing around, game masters have to allow a certain amount of that. If... You haven't game for 2 or 3 weeks. If your last game was a down tempo game, and nobody's expecting the big bad to come out or whatever in this one, people are going to start the game and they're going to be screwing around, jacking around. You have to start off the game. You have to let them do that.
If gaming is serious business, stop gaming.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I mean, honestly, it's a hobby. Now, I will hear this in its context, because certainly to have a good game and run a good game, people have to be invested and have to work. Mm-hmm. But if you've reached the point where you have no tolerance, there will be no fun at this table, then...
And, you know, I have to make a point that Chris has made about this very subject in the past. And I'm going to sound like I'm arguing with Chris, even though he's not here to defend himself. I don't mean to sound like that.
That's all right. I'll take up the torch for him.
I'm sure you will. I mean, you two see eye to eye on a lot of stuff.
True.
He says people have carved out a certain amount of time in their very busy schedules, and they are there for a reason. They are there to game. And when that time starts, people should come with their game on, and they should game. And he doesn't mean that in the fun stops here sort of way, because if you've ever gamed in one of Chris's games, they are incredibly fun.
Yeah, very much so.
But he is there to game, and I think that he would have a difference of opinion with us on this. And I just... Well,
I think there's a lot to that opinion. I mean,
you are there
for a purpose.
There is validity to that, but I think that there's also human nature you have to deal with. You have to let people kind of get out their social thing. I haven't seen so-and-so in 3 weeks. We got to do some catching up here real quick, and just get that social thing out so the social thing doesn't interrupt the rest of the game. You give the group 20 minutes of this social time where they can jack around a bit, and then you start bringing them in. There's another 5 minutes, and then you start laying down the hammer, and then you let the hammer drop, and then you're pretty much at the 30-minute mark.
I don't think that's the problem, though. I think the problem is when it continues going through the game.
Yeah. Right.
It would be like, yes, let's say we all go out bowling, we talk a few minutes before, then we start playing, and it suddenly comes up to Pat's turn, and we're all just sitting around talking. No, you know, Pat doesn't get up, doesn't bowl, it doesn't happen. You're not going to bowl.
I've had that exact experience, not with Pat, but I've gone out bowling where we can't progress the game because somebody's off playing a video game, somebody's over at the snack bar getting something, and we cannot progress the game.
You might be enjoying what you're doing, but that's not what you came here to do.
And I was going
to
say, I'm actually, with Chad's presentation of Chris's view, let's just pretend that puppet Chris is, in fact, what Chris would actually say.
I'm Chris, now I'm old.
He may accidentally call me here at some point, so you never know.
He does butt dial a lot.
Yeah.
It's great.
But
he's so old, he doesn't understand these concepts like cell phones.
You know what's funny about it, too, is because so he called me and
I'm going to make this point.
I texted him back, though. I texted him back after he accidentally called me, and I got the text later on, and the text that was replied to, I could actually tell that it was Julie. So I said, is this Julie? I said, oh, ask him about this morning. And so she goes, well, yes, it is, blah, blah, blah. I find it funny that I can actually tell the difference between Chris and Julie in text form.
Well, one is an intelligent, beautiful young woman, and the other is a crotchety old man
who scored like
a mother in his
But life. I also find it interesting that when I'm texting Chris and I'm actually getting responses from his, you know, the painted state of gaming.
Yes, yes.
But hey, whatever. Anyway, you had a point, Dan.
Okay,
are you going to get to it at any point?
Yeah, I know.
I'm like, going to come down.
Control your podcast.
This is the problem with your games, man. You're just like, I've got a stabbing screwdriver.
We have this ongoing joke that goes around the table. It's essentially control your game.
So I'm going to come down on Chris's
your
side.
Podcast.
I'm going to come down on Chris's side, his imaginary side on this, because there are two things at work here that cannot be denied. One is particularly once you're past that young adult stage, and you've got a career, and you've got a family, time like this is hard to come by, and you have to guard it jealously. And Chad, per your statement, I agree. We're friends. We want to catch up.
Yeah.
I have no problem allowing 30, 60 minutes when we first get together just to talk, BS, let everyone eat their dinner, whatever we're doing, to get through to the game. But Wayne, to your point, it does continue to go on throughout a lot of the night. And I think there is a point where, maybe it's incumbent to some degree upon the GM to control his table. But players who do this, quite frankly, are being extremely disrespectful to two things. One is the niche of time that's been carved out for this event. If you don't want a game, don't game. If you want to game, then let's game. And
I think people want their cake and eat it, too. They want a game, and they want to
socialize.
And
they want to screw around. And then secondly, it's also very disrespectful to the GM, particularly in the case of someone who GMs the way that, like Chris or I do, where we do a good amount of preparation. We've come with work, with investment. All the players have to do is show up, bring their characters, and not be douches. That's really all they have to do. And when they can't even take that one step of giving the Game Master's game a chance, sitting down, settling down, and role-playing, then at some point, I got to say, you know, this isn't the GM's fault anymore. At some point here, the players have to take some responsibility
for the way
another human being's being treated.
That's kind of assuming the players realize that they're doing it, though. I think a lot of cases, players don't even realize it. I know I've had that moment where I stop and I realize, wait a minute, I've just done 3 or 4 one-liners in a row while I was trying to get this other person across the table to stop earlier.
Well, that's not an excuse. That's an explanation. That's a new problem.
I think you're absolutely hitting on just human nature in general, because I actually experience this all the time in rehearsals. I'm a singer. I've been in choir rehearsals quite a bit. And one thing that just unnerves me, I'm sitting here in rehearsal and we're all here for the same thing, just like in the game. But everybody else is sitting there, they're gabbing, they're talking back and forth while the director is up front trying to give direction to, say, one particular section. They're all talking. I don't do that. You know, in this instance, I go to practice, I sit there in my seat, keep my mouth shut when it's not my turn to be whatever, and respecting the director, or in that case, the GM, and not talking while he's trying to do this, that, with the other sections. And it bothers me. Now, that's my discipline and the fact that I've done a lot of performance from early on up to now. So I was in situations where it was much more professional, whatever, what have you. But what I'm getting at is you're just talking about human nature. It's they're not really doing it to piss you off or to be mean or to be douches or anything like that. It's just something that humans do.
Yeah.
Well, and again, that leads me more back to my initial point of I really do think that it does fall on the person in charge to exert that control.
Well, and if the player doesn't know they're doing it, the GM has to do something to let them know they're doing it. You can't stop doing something you don't know you're doing.
I especially think that's true.
Because I still think we're letting the players off way too easy here.
And it comes back to another point that Wayne was bringing up where he's like, it doesn't seem to the players or to Wayne, to any of us, that we're doing this for a long time. When you're at work and work is dull and work is boring, 1 minute seems like an hour. But when you're having fun, 1 hour seems like 1 minute. So you're gabbing and going back and forth and gabbing, going back and forth, having fun, and then you look at the clock's like, oh my God, we've been doing this for 2 hours. I mean, I've done that before. I've done, usually at the 1 hour mark, I stop and I'm like,
and that may be a fair point, but to say as if it's an excuse, I'm not aware I'm being rude. That's a brand new issue, but that's still a big issue. I mean, if you don't realize what courtesy is, I don't think that excuses.
If everyone there at the table is doing it, it's not a, I don't want to get into that argument of if everyone's doing it, it's okay. What I'm saying is if everyone is there at the table is doing it, and you don't realize you're doing it, you don't realize everyone else is doing it.
It's easy to fall into.
Exactly. There has to be some way that the GM can get that message across to people and just say, you guys are doing this, so you know.
Yeah.
I mean, if I know, if I catch myself doing it, I stop and I try to get everyone else back into the game.
But even in the midst, that's my question, is even in the midst of that, I follow what you're saying. That's easy to get caught up in that current. But at no point in that is there this moment of lucidity where you're kind of like, oh my gosh, it's 9:30 and all we've been doing is jacking around and Dan's tried 6 times to get this going. And
I think that
I'm saying when I have that moment, I try to get it going and it always fails.
And I think that it's like when you're listening to classical music, like an orchestra, before they start, there's all this murmuring going on in the crowd, the murmur that's going in the crowd. And then there's all of the people tuning their instruments and flipping pages and they're talking amongst each other. And then you hear that tick, 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 silence. And then the conductor raises his baton, those first notes come up. And I think that that's, you know, to totally stretch that metaphor out of context, that's a lot like a role-playing game. The game master has to make a stand. The game master has to stand up and say, stop, we're going to role-play now.
I think what the GM does is they give the cues. And
yes,
going back to what you said, that we're letting the players off too easy, that's not what I was trying to say with what I was saying with the whole human nature thing. I think, I'm the one who, like I said, I'm the one who sits there quietly and disciplinedly does, and you know, don't. And I think that's what players need to do. I think you're right. And I think what you said about Chris is right. And I come down here with Chris. I think you are. You know what? We're here to game. That's what we're going to do. You need to be disciplined about it. And it's not that if gaming is a chore, stop gaming. That's not what we're getting into. We're here to game.
Right.
This is what we've chosen to do to have fun. Let's be disciplined about it and do it.
You wouldn't go to a mini golf course and not play mini golf.
Yeah. Well, exactly. Kind of I mean, you're there. You've just got to be disciplined.
Running around is really hard work and no one likes to do it. But people play soccer. You know, they're there to play soccer, so they run around, they do that. And the same thing's true. Everybody wants to jack around and have fun and socialize, but we are there to not jack around like that, and we are there to game. And yes, I agree. I think that it is incumbent upon the player not to be rude. It is incumbent on the game master to control his game and kind of bring together focus. But I think that both groups need to realize some things about human nature, that humans are social creatures. You need to get things out in the front so that you can kind of get into things and you need to warm up and then you can have a good game.
So going back to your orchestra example, like you said, tap, 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 everyone's at attention. Mm-hmm. What about doing something like that with your group?
Yeah. Well,
having a conversation before the game starts, it has to be even before you start a campaign. Hey guys, I know we've had this before.
Signal.
I am going to come up with a signal, a word, a whatever.
We
mess
that
around as much as we want beforehand. When I say that word, this is what I mean. It means I want to get started.
We had that in our old group, Dan. In our old group with Paul, it was cheesy as hell, but it worked. Everybody would be dicking around, and then he would go, hey, and he'd raise his hands up, and then he would kind of do the jazz hands thing above his head with his arms extended, and then he would move his arms outward in an arc, and he would say, Dome of IC,
as he would say,
meaning in character, and it would put the Dome of IC up. And when the Dome of IC came up, that means everything that you said from that point on, your character was saying in character. And, you know, he didn't necessarily hold you to that, because as the game went on, people don't talk in character all the time.
You know, and if everyone agrees with this ahead of time, and you do that as a GM, and everyone at the table's still messing with you,
because
then you have a problem.
Because if you're dicking around, and you know you're in front of the ambassador of Larlu, and his war host is going to invade your country, and every moment counts, and then suddenly Paul calls the Dome of IC, and you're like, ah, yeah, and then I pulled her pants down, and
that's what she said.
That's what she said, and it's just like the ambassador of Larlu looks at you and goes, "It is war, then," and you know, and you're like, it brings your attention.
I want to move on to another topic, but I just want to close this one out by saying I think the struggle that I have is...
You fight for GM rights.
No, well, I do, but that aside, I think it's you want to do it without having to be the asshole. Imagine if you're that orchestra conductor and you do that tap, 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 and a quarter of the crowd will not stop talking.
And you know, if you do that like, tap, then, tap, tap, and the crowd doesn't, you know, doesn't stop talking, they're the...
Well, well, I've
given the symbol, or, it's
but
their problem.
To solve the problem, what does the conductor do? Does he get down? Does he go into the crowd or yelling at him? Does
well,
he?
Because that's the rules.
That's a different problem.
Because that is the rules. Every single person who walks into that building, who either paid a ticket, works as an usher, or is the conductor, or is the orchestra, knows that is the rules. When you're at a gaming group, there are no rules. Everything is just understood. There is consensus. Everything is soft. Everything is gray.
Security's not going to kick you out for disrupting my game.
My thing is that's what, when Paul did that Dome of IC, I'm not saying the Dome of IC, because that is corny as hell.
Any symbol, any word that's unique.
When the game master goes to the guys and says, listen, a lot of table talk, you're disrupting my game, you guys are driving me crazy. When I do this, when I stand up, when I pull my pants down, when I do the Dome of IC.
Chad, if you pull your pants down, it's not going to get everyone focused.
Right. No, believe me. I know. But you have to come to your players and say, we're going to screw around. That's fine. I understand. But when I do X, everybody stops.
And you have to do it before the problem starts.
Yes.
You have to have this set before the game.
I want to change gears here a little bit and talk about something that Chad was suggesting as a topic, which is getting your players to role play. Now, I want to explain the setup here, because we don't mean this exactly how it sounds at face value. The issue here is not that...
Because it's really getting players to role play like Chad.
Yeah.
That's the important thing.
It's not getting them to role play at all, but it's getting them to role play in a particular moment.
Yeah, we covered this a couple weeks back. You go into a room, you sit there, you meditate, you think about the game, and it's over.
You know what? Actually, when you said that, that actually made me angry.
But the setup here, and I want to explain this a little bit, because we're not talking about getting your players to role play at all, but we mean at a specific moment. For example, let's say you're playing a science fiction game, and or you could be playing a fantasy game. Every game's got downtime at some point. And this moment of downtime comes where they're on the ship.
And you're talking about like a low tempo part of the game, not a, boy, this game really sucks downtime.
Yeah, exactly. I don't mean downtime as in a boring time, but there's a downtime where the characters aren't being chased around by guards with guns going, oi, oi, oi. And
please put that in the next game. I want soccer hooligans in the next game.
But there's some point in the game where you want everybody to roleplay amongst themselves. You want them to declare, this is what my character's doing in his free time. Or I'm going to go talk to so-and-so or explore some aspect of their character. That you as a game master are kind of passing the baton over to the players for a moment. And I realize not every game is going to have this, and not every game master is going to do this. But I think pretty universally across all games, this is going to come up at some point. You're going to need them to make some kind of a decision or to fill in the action themselves. And they don't do it. How do you handle that?
To kind of even explain this more, it's those situations that, well, at least every role-playing group that I've been in, I think that most role-playing groups had, you're out in the woods and you have your big adventure, Adventure X, and then you know Adventure Y is coming, but it's not even close to being there, and you're camping for the woods, and the GM's like, you make the fire, you set the tents, you set the guard watch, it's not quite time to go to bed yet. And then he stops and he looks at the players expectantly.
As a player, I hate that.
And it
I mean,
say
I
want
to get into the role-playing situation, but at because that what point, I'm set there and I have no idea what to say.
Yeah.
I'm looking around everyone, someone else start.
Because what the game master wants, and I've done this to my players, and I've had it done to me, what the game master wants is to the players to spontaneously start role-playing with each other. They want Dan's character to start interacting with Pat's character without any other motivation than in their mind.
I think you've hit on the nail on the head right there with the without any other motivation.
Mm-hmm.
And this is why, and I've seen this in games, I've played in and I've run, and I think is ultimately problematic for that reason, is you're asking them without any other motivation. For example, let's do the generic setup to every fantasy game in the world. You guys are staying in a tavern. You wake up that morning and go down for your mutton stew and ale, since that's all we drink for some reason.
And flirting with Violet.
Which, no, if there's a Legend of the Red Dragon game, that'd be great. But there's a shady-looking guy sitting in the back corner with a scroll case. The game master wants you to go over and start talking to this guy, because clearly he's out of place. Go.
Yeah.
Hail, traveler. I don't recognize thee.
You know, even that is easier. Because imagine the same exact setup where everybody goes downstairs and there's no Violet and you get your mutton stew and there's no shady guy in the back room and you're about to head out for the, you have your list of tasks to do for the day and the game master really isn't letting you do it.
I see. I know exactly what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. And I think it's very hard because, well, what you're getting at is you're wanting to have player interaction with really no seeming benefit or moving along of the story because...
Which, in concept, is a great idea.
It is.
I think
this is the thing that would add to the role-playing, would add to the session. The problem is that, like, from my standpoint, I'm sitting there going, okay, Dan's the GM, but he wants me to talk with Wayne. Mm-hmm. I'm sitting there thinking, well, I could sit there and have a little conversation with Wayne, but it's not going to do anything to basically further the story along.
And you
I mean, we'll interact and we'll learn about each other, and that's, you know, that's awesome.
And actually, that's great.
It's not, you know, it's not moving the story along. And that's I struggle with that.
You know, in listening to this conversation, I think we're coming off as role-playing only needs to happen when there is motivation or, you obtain something. And that's not what we're saying. Because you can have a game where there's role-playing all the time and stuff is happening and there's stimulus. The game master is providing some kind of stimulus. Whatever your group needs. Combat, interaction, plot, puzzles, whatever. It doesn't matter. And there's always some sort of role-playing going on. And like Wayne and I, our characters kind of have a sidebar and your character overhears and he comes into it while this is happening and this is and the intrigue and all these connections and role playing connections are being made.
And all of that feels natural.
And it feels natural because there's something going on.
Mm-hmm.
And then what we're talking about is those times in games where the game master is sitting there going, I really want to recreate those magic moments. And everybody at my table, Dan and Pat and Wayne, all have really great, interesting characters that really could interact with each other. And when they interact with each other, you know, each of them has secrets and they're going to, oh, it's going to be great. And so, all right, this all this crazy stuff just happened and they're getting ready for all this other crazy stuff. All right, let's make camp.
Yeah. And then without a hook, it just deteriorates into us trying to figure a way to do small talk. And
it's very much like trying to create a friendship that as I think about this and all the times I've seen it in a game, it's always because there is some misplaced desire on behalf of the GM. As Chad said, maybe they're trying to recreate that magic moment of RP that you can't do. You can't do it anymore. You can force people to be friends. Maybe in some cases there's a plot point he's not ready to drop just yet. Or he's put out clues that you're not picking up on. And so he's trying to give you time to hopefully pick up what it is he's putting down. But all you end up with is these awkward moments where oftentimes the players don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. And I think as GMs, we need to be careful not to do this, not to create these expectations. Have a good plot. Ask the people to have well-defined characters and understand who they're playing. But then let the game develop naturally from there. If they've got to put down camp for the night, great. Ask them about the little details. You know, what are you guys eating? What order are you doing watching or whatever the setup is for your group? And if there's something going on, then somebody's going to say, hey, I'm pulling so-and-so aside. And they're going to have a moment of RP. We had this in our last game where Chad multiple times at camp, you're an ice character, would pull each other aside because we knew there was at least one or two other members of the group that we didn't quite trust. Mm-hmm. And we thought we might be under the sway of very dark powers. And it turns out we were right. And, you know, also pull the other side and be like, hey, you know, we need to do this. We need to watch this. And I'm going to, they think I have the MacGuffin. I'm going to give it to you so you can hide it so they don't know where it is anymore or something like that.
Yeah.
And these things would come up naturally because the players wanted them, not because at some point the GM was like, stop.
I've found that anytime we try to do something like that, where if we've talked about it ahead of time, there's something we want to hit on, there is those moments we want to generate, it always falls apart.
Yeah. The classic example is when Wayne and I, because our desks are right next to each other, we've been talking about this nuance of his character and this nuance of my character and about how they really need to kind of connect and explore this aspect of their characters. And we talk about for a week, we talk about for 2 weeks, then we finally get to it, and we're really excited. And then
we role play out the whole conversation, just talking about it.
Yeah. But then when it actually comes time in game, we're just like, and it goes nowhere.
It went so poorly that after the fact, we're just kind of sitting there like, it not only killed immersion, we had to actually turn to each other and say, man, that didn't work.
And I think it failed because it was contrived. And from a GM perspective, I think that that's what we're talking about.
This is the GM equivalent of what we did.
Yeah. We've kind of been able to explain like what it is and what's going on and what the problem is.
How as a GM do you present that situation without it becoming that?
I think the answer I would give is don't do it at all. Because what is probably going on here is there's an element you want in your game. It's not cropping up organically, and so you're contriving it. And just as any other part of the plot or character development that feels contrived is going to suck, the exact same thing is going to be true with these role-playing moments. And I really think the best thing you can do is, if a game master, you say, look, I want more role-playing out of these guys. Well, then what you need to do is give them a better reason to role-play. Really get into the motivations or backgrounds of their characters. Heck, here's another great thing. Stick in an NPC. Guess what that NPC is? He's your mouthpiece. If you want conversation to occur around the campfire, then you say, you guys set up camp, and Boffo the Wizards, who's with you, says, so, let's say we get there and the princess is dead, then what?
But Boffo, we're in a post-nuclear wasteland, and you're a wizard named Boffo. There is no princess.
Yeah, and we don't even have magic. How are you a wizard?
And then suddenly roleplay goes on back and forth, hopefully.
Until finally he's in a white coat getting hauled off.
And then Boffo can... Yeah, that. Well, actually, I was going to go there. Boffo suddenly exits the scene, and the game master...
And you know what? For the next 15 minutes after, we're all role-playing our conversation of, man, that guy was weird.
Well, and that's one of the great things I love about NPCs, is while I will never espouse using them as Mary Sue's or Baron Von Badass or anything like that, they are great for nudging players in a certain direction. Bringing up issues, for pointing out angles, for picking up on plot points. They're great for picking up a stuck party. But and an NPC is just one solution.
Okay, so I've been in this situation a few times, though, Dan. And let's say where this situation has happened as a player, and you're sitting there, and I have no idea what to say. I mean, as a player, what can I do to get this moving? And because basically, at this point, it's awkward. I want the game to go on, and I'm just kind of sitting there.
And you do want to role play. I mean, that's why you're...
I want to role play
Pat,
the conversation, but
to
I don't
kill
want
things
to...
and steal their boots. But
I don't know what to say. I kind of always feel like I feel it's an awkward moment. I want to get into that. I want to do the role play, have the conversations, but I don't want to just do small talk. I don't know what my character would do small talk wise. Mm-hmm. So what do you do?
I'd metagame it back. I'd put it right back to the GM and just say, I haven't figured out my character yet. I've got nothing specific to talk about at the moment. Is there something you're trying to get out of this scene? If not, can we just fast forward, get on with the plot, and maybe that will give us something more to discuss?
Well, what if the GM says, well, I want you guys to role play? And then he brings up some really good points. It's like,
and you know,
okay, Dan, your character stole the coin bag from Pat's character, and Wayne, you caught Dan doing it, and you've tried to make excuses to Pat, but you're a really bad liar, and so there's this tension building up, and he's like, that's kind of what I was getting at. It's like, can we, because we're never going to explore it, because the next day there's going to be the zombie attack, and it's going to be five sessions of killing the zombie king. So can we maybe explore that? I think the players can be like, okay, yeah, we can.
The problem
work
is
on
being
that.
A player in that situation. I'm left thinking, okay, I want to explore this. I have no idea how.
I don't think this would just apply to role playing, because I have seen the same sort of thing with any moment where the GM passes the baton back to the players. There's no obvious plot at that moment of the game. What do you do? He's expecting you to go out and create. Yeah, expecting you to go out and create your own action.
I can say what I've done, and this may be the douchebag move, but I've simply said my character goes to sleep.
And see,
I've got nothing
weak.
To say, and I have nothing to add. It is weak, but I'm not helping anything at that point. I want the game to go on.
I think that a good role player can answer that question. I think that a good role player doesn't need plot to play their characters, in as much as they don't need combat to play their character. They don't need puzzles.
But they might need a springboard.
Well, but it may be a failure then of either character development or group template. And I mean, but maybe, because if we're sitting around and we cannot come up with any plan of action, any objective we'd like to chase, anything our characters would talk about, I'd say you've probably got a problem that predates the start of the game.
Maybe your characters just don't like each other. Well, I mean,
maybe your characters are so insufficiently developed, they have no clear motivation. Maybe the group template's so insufficiently developed that your characters have no relationship. That there's nothing there to work from. Right. And I know this can be awkward in a first game because you're basically cold calling the entire scene. Yeah. But especially if you're half a dozen sittings into a game, and you're still at a point where, man, the game master passes you time, which, once again, I'm still saying I think is probably a bad move on the GM's part.
No. Because ultimately,
if it's not occurring organically, it probably shouldn't occur at all.
Well, I mean, I think that there's certain cues. I think that maybe the baton kind of gets dropped sometimes, but the players can pick it up. I mean, we're talking about role players here. We're talking about people who it's all about interactions with each other. Be they good, bad, aggressive, whatever, and interactions with the NPC, I really find it hard to believe that the only way a character can interact is if there's something going on that the GM is generating.
You know what I say that, though? I say, hand them the baton, don't walk in and drop it on the floor. Pick out the person to start it. Okay, you guys are sitting on the campfire. Chad, what are you doing? What are you saying?
How do you feel about a game master coming? Like, we'll use that situation where your character stole Pat's corn purse, caught by Wayne, and the whole triangle thing. How would you feel about the game master coming into that situation? You make camp, blah, 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 blah. Wayne, your character is feeling really guilty. Because his character is feeling guilty. I mean, I don't want the game master to make up emotions that Wayne's character is feeling. Wayne has come to him and said, my character feels really guilty about this. Or he could say, Pat, you're noticing that Wayne is acting weird about something.
And I like that approach to it.
Your coin purse is feeling a little light. Don't have your character draw that connection immediately, but I think of all the people who can meta, I think the game master can. In the game master character, set up camp, describe the evening, talk about things, the stars are shining, full moon, whatever.
And that's exactly what I'm saying.
Hand the baton. The game master sets it up. He sets the stage of saying, you just can't say role play because your characters are wonderful.
Yeah, situation or say, okay, you guys make camp.
You guys make camp. And you can stop and you can say, guys, I want you to interact with each other. I want you to role play. What do you need from me? And the players can say, well, I don't know. I mean, we're here. What should we talk about? And the game master can say, well, you had that adventure. Your character background is this.
As president of the pro GM party, I'm going to come out with an answer and then a thought. And maybe we'll close the show out on the thought. But the answer is that I would say, as a player who has sympathy for what the GM is doing, the amount of work the GM has put into the game, if it's clear he's wanting me to do something, even if I'd say maybe it shouldn't be there at all, but it's happened. He clearly wants us to role play or talk to an NPC or something, and I'm not really feeling it. But the game master's made it obvious that's what he's looking for. I'll give it the old college try.
Yeah,
I'm not going to be a douche and say no. I'll at least try. And if it's half-assed or awkward or doesn't quite come out right, I just won't torture the scene by keeping it going.
Yeah.
But the thought, and maybe this will close out on, is I don't run my games this way. And I don't think anyone currently at this table does. So I've known people, at least in the past, maybe that have never even appeared on this podcast. So I've played with people in the past where their style of GMing is to basically tell the players the world is your oyster. They want you to come to the table with a character who's got motivations and goals and maybe a cohesive party, but they have no plot written. That's the intention, mm-hmm. is they want the players to go out and create their own action. Now, personally, that is not my preferred style of play.
And honestly, it's not my style of play either.
Nor mine.
But it's fine, because I've known groups mm-hmm. that run that type of game and really enjoy it. But here's the thing that I would say as my closing thought, is if we look at life, there are very few black and whites. Most things fall somewhere in that shade of gray. There's no game I've ever played that is free of any conflict. But certainly some games have more combat or less combat than other games. If you sit in even the most hard-ass dungeon crawl, there's some amount of character and roleplay. If you sit in the most theatrical role-playing game, there's some amount of game mechanic going on.
We didn't roleplay this weekend because various things happened, but we played old-school 1989 Milton Bradley Hero Quest. And we were totally hamming it up, and there was still role play in that. Right. I mean, there were fluff texts and that happened.
Elfin John was a good role player, Chad. I give you that.
I would say this is the
same.
All
about the hair.
This is the same thing. If the style of game that you're running is not one that's the world is your oyster, the players are going to create all the action, and the GM's simply going to referee the results, that you are still going to expect that at some point in the game, some element of that's going to pop up. And the players should have enough sense of their character, enough interest in the plot, and enough decency to the GM that when that hooks drop, they at least take a nibble.
Yeah, they at least give it the old college try.
So,
and I don't think that there's anything wrong with a player looking at the GM and saying,
what do you want from me?
Yeah, okay, time out.
What's my motivation?
As silly as it sounds, I mean, you don't have to frame it like that, but, you know.
This is awkward. I'm not sure what you
what
want.
Is it, what is it
I'm willing to work with
there.
You. Just tell me.
Right.
Yeah.
So,
because remember, players aren't mind readers, and GMs aren't either.
Oh, you're going to finish last?
No, I did finish
it. Oh, you did finish.
This abortion in a mug that you made. It's this... I mean, this stuff looked like dysentery.
I still have aftertaste from that. That was at the beginning of the episode.
I liked it. It made me sweat. I'm one of those hot guys where I'm always cold. No. I need to be hot all the time. I'm actually sweating, and I had to take my jacket off. I really liked it. I mean, I wouldn't necessarily ever drink it again.
Because I can mix it up. I've got two more in there, so we can mix that up again. But
I think you killed a lot of brain cells with that.
But I don't know what it is. I mean, it was really bitter, and it was really sweet, and it was really acidic, and it was really citrus, and none of these things really go together.
And you're making the bad taste in my mouth get worse and worse and worse with every description.
And you're right. I still taste it, and why did I like that? I don't understand why I like that.
Well, we sent Chad to consult his life coach and give Wayne some scope. You guys have a good week, and we will catch you next time.
See
you
later.
See ya. Hey, C is my line. You need to come up with your own, buddy.
I said it first.
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2009. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com. Fear the Boot is also a member of the Pulp Gamer Media Network of shows. You can find other great shows in this network at pulpgamer.com.